This is The Record. I'm Steve Scheer.
And I'm David Hyde. And Astoria is a blue-collar town down in Oregon. You hit it when you cross the Columbia River out at the coast. Steve, when's the last time you were in Astoria?
Thanksgiving time. I go by Astoria every year. It's Thanksgiving. I love coming over the bridge, and I love seeing the columns of deserted the piers that are rotting in the river there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it too. And if you've been there recently, you probably know that the city's going through a bit of a revival these days. There's fancy hotels, even some hipster hotspots. But back before the salmon or the tourist trade, back before there was a city named Astoria, a New York businessman had his eye on the place. This was the early 1800s, not that long after the American Revolution. And our guest today says this businessman, John Jacob Astor, was a bit like the Bill Gates of his era, except he made his fortune in fur pelts and real estate.
He became wealthy early and fairly quickly. And then he came up with this incredible scheme, this enormous global scheme.
To make a major fur trading post and outpost for American power on the West Coast, but it didn't go very well. Author Peter Stark tells that story in his new book, Astoria, John Jacob Astor, and Thomas Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire. So how did President Thomas Jefferson get involved?
Astor wrote to Thomas Jefferson and said, I have this vision of a West Coast colony, of a fur empire that could exist on the West Coast. Jefferson, at the same time, had been thinking about how to establish a presence on the West Coast. Meriwether Lewis had come back just a few years earlier and said what the U.S. really needs is a port on the West Coast. Alexander Mackenzie had said the same thing to the British after he had arrived on the West Coast some years earlier, before Lewis and Clark. So Jefferson thought, okay, the U.S. doesn't have the capacity to establish its own colony, but commercial enterprise could do it. And so he and Astor met in the president's house in Washington, and you could see they just came up with this grand vision. Jefferson was thinking it as the seeds of a separate country, a separate sister democracy on the West Coast, and that democracy on the West Coast would spread across the continent and meet the democracy that was just starting on the East Coast. Whereas Astor saw it as a global trade empire. A world monopoly on furs is what he was striving for.
Peter Stark's book is Astoria, John Jacob Astor, and Thomas Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire. So how was this plan supposed to work? When they start to execute it, what was Astor's vision for how it was going to work?
Well, he was a very meticulous, very smart, very focused, and he planned way in advance for every possibility. So he launched it by starting two advance parties, one overland across the continent on the Lewis and Clark route, a tremendously large, well-funded expedition, much larger than Lewis and Clark, and another seagoing advance party was going around Cape Horn on a ship called the Tonquin, and that would carry a lot of supplies to land at the mouth of the Columbia River and establish the colony. And then from there, the colony would establish a network of trade posts up into the Rocky Mountains, all through the west, up the Columbia Basin, and would also collect furs from as far up as Alaska all the way up and down the West Coast and funnel them through the emporium, through Astor's hands, essentially, to China, into this world network.
And John Jacob Astor, to accomplish this, has to hire a number of surrogates, a number of expedition leaders and captains to carry out this vision. One of them is the captain that you just referenced, Captain Jonathan Thorne, who was the first sea captain.
The first sea captain.
Tell us about him. How did that work out for Astor and for Thorne?
Well, as you say, that Astor went to find the best in the business to work his fur empire, so he hired a number of Canadians and French Canadian voyageurs and Scottish fur traders from the Canadian fur trade. He hired Jonathan Thorne, who was a young U.S. naval hero who was known to be fearless in battle, was great to command a warship. The issue here, however, was he'd never been in command of a merchant ship. And this was Astor's Tonquin, a merchant ship, although it was armed with 10 cannon and 9,000 pounds of gunpowder. And Thorne had under his command a crew of Yankee sailors, but also this shaggy lot of fur traders.
Why so heavily armed?
It was a really interesting question. These commercial ships were heavily armed because there was danger out there of pirates, of foreign powers, of whatever. And all of Astor's ships were heavily armed, everyone I'd heard about.
So what happens to Thorne?
The first night out of New York Harbor, Thorne at 8 o'clock orders all lights out on a ship. The Scottish fur traders and the voyageurs are still smoking their pipes on deck, and they're not ready to go to bed. And Thorne said, lights out, and the fur traders say, well, we own part of the ship because Astor had made them partners. And Thorne becomes really angry and says, the first man who disobeys orders aboard my own ship, I'll blow his brains out. That was 8 o'clock on the first night out of New York Harbor, and the voyage deteriorated from there. Thorne was in such a hurry, so eager to get across, he sent several rowboats, longboats and whaleboats, into a storm to find the channel across the Columbia Bar. Two or three of those boats were lost. Nine men drowned simply trying to find the channel.
And these are the waters that the U.S. Coast Guard uses to train because they're so treacherous.
They're so treacherous.
They're just throwing whaleboats over there.
They're throwing whaleboats. And the mouth of the Columbia today is still this incredibly difficult stretch of water in the world. And it's marked by buoys, channels, breakwaters, jetties. Then you had to find your own way across. And that's what these guys were doing. But Thorne finally dropped the colony, the makings of the colony, and sailed up to Vancouver Island on his first trading mission. He had a very experienced Scottish fur trader aboard who went into some villages on Vancouver Island, Indian villages. Of course, the coastal Indians had very sophisticated trading networks and were very sophisticated, well-developed cultures, very wealthy. And Thorne was dismissing them as, you know, ignorant or whatever. Some Indian traders came out to his ship, and he, unbeknownst to the Scottish fur trader who was on shore, Thorne decided to go ahead and trade on his own. Immediately got into an argument with an Indian elder, and Thorne became so angry he shoved a sea otter fur in the Indian elder's face and threw him off the ship. It was not a good idea.
So how does it ultimately work out for Thorne? And we're talking to Peter Stark about his book, talking about John Jacob Astor's effort to create a global trading empire, really focused in Oregon on the coast of the Columbia in a place called, that we now know as Astoria.
Astoria.
So what happens ultimately to Thorne?
Essentially, the trader says, we really need to get out of here after you've done that. And the interpreter says the same thing. That was bad. And he says, what can these people do against a ship armed like this? And so he stays anchored in the cove off the Indian villages. And the next day, the Indians paddle out in canoes and say, hold up furs and say, we're willing to trade at your own price. We agree. And they hold up bundles of furs. He lets them aboard. And there are many Indians on deck trading furs. And the fur trader says, we really should get out of here. This is not good. And Thorne finally gives the order, okay, we'll leave. And as soon as he gives the order and the men start climbing the rigging to unfurl the sails, one of the Indians gives a signal and they all give a huge war cry, pull war clubs out of their bundles of sea otter furs and club everybody over the head to death. It doesn't end there, however.
So the point is, it's a more ambitious project than even Astor could have imagined, knowing, that there was a lot of perils involved in the whole thing. How effective was John Jacob Astor as a manager of people of this project?
Well, I think he was effective as a manager. His big problem was communication, that it was a year-long lag or even two to communicate with his people on the West Coast. The Overland Party got trapped in the canyons of what's now the Snake River because they were trying to avoid the Blackfeet up in the headwaters of the Missouri. So they diverted from the Lewis and Clark route. Astor didn't even know whether or not his party, led by a young New Jersey businessman who'd never been in the wilderness before, Wilson Price Hunt, he didn't know for 2 years whether or not Wilson Price Hunt had arrived at the mouth of the Columbia to establish the colony. He didn't know for 2 years what had happened to the Tonkin. So he was trying to tell his people to hang tough, and he was sending ship after ship out there, supply ship after supply ship, but they didn't realize how much he was behind their endeavor, that he wanted them to hang in there.
And there's many other great stories in Peter Stark's book about Astoria, but I want to fast forward to the end and ask what ultimately happens to Astor's vision.
Ultimately, he is, in a sense, betrayed by a Scottish fur trader who's not loyal to Astor, but who's essentially loyal to his own interests. the War of 1812 breaks out when the U.S. declares war against Great Britain. The historians, it takes them a long time to get news of the war. However, the British, the rival British fur traders have got news of the war earlier, and they show up at Astoria saying, we're going to attack you with the Royal Navy, so you better just sell out to us now while you have a chance. So they sold out. Ultimately, had things gone differently, the whole configuration of the West Coast could look very different. I mean, it could be a whole separate country called Astoria.
So was that a sense? What did Astor feel like he'd lost when this ultimately, this whole experiment ultimately failed?
He lost this incredible vision that he had. And both he and Jefferson saw the Pacific would be a center of global trade, a center of commerce, a center of gravity, the way the Atlantic was in their day. And they saw that very early, way before most people. The Pacific was just being explored. You know, it had been explored by Cook just a few years earlier. They lost that.
How many people died trying to carry this out?
Well, out of the 140 advance parties, two advance parties, close to half of them died in various violent ways. That was, unlike Lewis and Clark, 30 people, one death.
If you had to sum it up, what do you feel like you learned about? You spent a lot of time with this guy researching this book. What did you learn about John Jacob Astor through your research that's sort of the takeaway for you?
What was so amazing to me about him is that the far-reaching vision he had, and also the fact that he was knocked down in this huge endeavor, Astoria. But he hung in there. He was so focused, and he hung in there, although there was a big cost in human lives. He hung in there. This Astoria scheme vision didn't work, but he ended up being a huge fur baron in the interior part of the country and, you know, incredibly wealthy, incredibly successful all through the Rocky Mountains, the upper Midwest, and owning a huge chunk of Manhattan. So in terms, in a commercial way, he really succeeded. He had this energy and this drive and this focus on the bottom line, and being knocked down didn't stop him. He just kept on, kept moving forward.
That's Peter Stark, author of the new book, Astoria, John Jacob Astor and Thomas Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire. You're listening to The Record on KUOW.